All right, we are continuing the Sermon on the Mount, living upside down. Living upside down. It's not always easy to live upside down, is it? Sometimes it's kind of hard to live upside down because everybody else looks like they're right side up and they think they're right side up. It turns out they're upside down, you're right side up when we're living for Jesus. So again, the passage this morning is Matthew chapter 6. And it's verses 1 through 4, so I'm just going to read that portion again to you, and then we'll be on our way. Beware, beware of practicing your righteousness before other people in order to be seen by them, for then you will have no reward from your Father who is in heaven. Thus, when you give to the needy, sound no trumpet before you as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may be praised by others. Truly, I say to you, they have received their reward. But when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret, and your Father, who sees in secret, will reward you. All right. We're past chapter 5 now. We finally got out of chapter 5. We're in chapter 6. Of Matthew, and chapter 5 has been talking about the ones who are really well off. These are the ones who base their lives on acceptance and willingness to live based on what God is doing in human history. Now, this usually means that they don't look so well off to everyone else. They're the poor in spirit, they're the mourners, the meek, those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, the merciful, the pure in heart, peacemakers, and even the persecuted. These are the people who are well off from the perspective of the kingdom of heaven. These are the people who have true influence in the world. Jesus calls them salt and light because of their profound difference from the world. In other words, they're receiving marching orders not from the world, but from Jesus. They're hearing that voice in their head all the time. They are in the world, but they are not of the world. The good person who pays attention to the law of God and sees behind the poor teaching of it, they have a righteousness that goes beyond the righteousness of the scribes and the Pharisees. In other words, the religious elite of Jesus' day were the ones who just weren't getting it, were the ones that Jesus had the most trouble with. The religious establishment. That's why even today people say, you know, when they find out what I do, oh, you're a pastor, hey, you know what, I don't like organized religion. So I say, well, come to our church because we're the least organized religion you're ever going to meet. So there. Organized, what they mean by that is this establishment of religiosity, which in all honesty does the world no favors. Jesus wants us, all of us, to see behind that, and we're going to get more into that today. So now he moves into a different but related subject. The subject he deals with now is what can block us from living our lives in the reality of the presence of the kingdom of heaven. What blocks that in our lives? And he's going to move into two answers. The answers, ironically, are these. First answer is that we desire to gain the approval of others, especially religious approval. In other words, we're living so that others see us and think we're cool. We're living for the applause of the crowd. Secondly, we have a desire to seek safety and security through material wealth rather than through God's care. Those two things can block out, can thwart our inner desire to live according to the kingdom of heaven, to live as Jesus would have us to. And so he warns us about those things. So here's what the message is about today. Jesus begins to talk about how to authentically practice spiritual disciplines. The disciplines that he's going to look at are giving to the needy, prayer, and fasting. Now, we're going to look at giving to the needy today. Next week, we're going to unpack the idea of prayer that he teaches us. And then the following week, we'll be fasting. And since, so what I thought, well, for the fasting message, if I do it, you're not going to take it very seriously. So I chose Nathan, the thinnest staff person we have, to talk about fasting. You will believe him when he talks about it, all right? So there's where we're going to be going over the next 3 weeks. Here's the purpose of the message: to encourage us to give in a way that is authentic and wins the applause of heaven. So before he moves into these three topics, Jesus gives a general warning, and that's the first point today, the general warning that he gives. And here's the general warning: beware of practicing your, and let me stop you there, the your is plural, so he's speaking to everyone here, beware of practicing your righteousness before other people in order to be seen by them, for then you will have no reward from your Father who is in heaven. Okay, once again, that pronoun your is plural. Later on, it's going to move to singular. Jesus is warning that religion can make hypocrites of us all. Religion in and of itself. If that's all we're in it for, is religious stuff, we will ultimately become hypocritical. We will ultimately probably become judgmental as well, in a way that he condemns in chapter 7. Religion in and of itself is not what Jesus is after. It's the great irony. Jesus was an observant Jewish man, right? He went to temple. He did all the religious stuff. But what he is saying to his followers then and now is that we should not look to our religious practices to be the things that we think are going to win favor with heaven if all they are is religious practices. Religion can be turned on its ear in a very bad way. We all know this. We've seen it. And so it's a warning that Jesus gives that is appropriate for all of us. Religion in and of itself can be dangerous. And even when we make progress in our spiritual life, in our inner formation to the image of Christ, it can produce in us a very subtle and disturbing form of pride. Can't it? Like, we've just done something good, and it feels good, and then all of a sudden comes the temptation to become proud of that. C.S. Lewis wrote about this in the Screwtape Letters. If you're familiar with that book, it is one demon whose name is Screwtape writing to an underling who is trying to tempt this man out of, you know, Christianity, out of true faith. And this man has made some progress. And so the junior demon is wondering, what do I do about this, to the senior demon? And so here's what the senior demon writes to him. I see only one thing to do at the moment. Your patient has become humble. Have you drawn his attention to this? All virtues are less formidable to us once the man is aware that he has them. But this is especially true of humility. Catch him at the moment when he is really poor in spirit and smuggle into his mind the gratifying reflection, now he was British, by Jove, I'm being humble. And immediately pride at his own humility will appear. If he awakes to the danger and tries to smother this new form of pride, make him proud of his attempt to do so, and so on, through as many stages as you please, but don't try this for long, for fear you awake his sense of humor and proportion, in which case he will merely laugh at you and go to bed. It can sneak in there, though, can't it? Pride at our own humility, pride at our religious activity, pride at what we've done, even though we know that it is all the work of Christ in and through us, and what we do is simply a response to that. We like to take credit for it sooner or later, and it does become a great temptation. So Jesus zeroes in on three religious practices: giving to the poor, praying, and fasting. These were standard Jewish practices. They're standard Christian practices, except perhaps for the fasting one. Jesus calls this practicing your righteousness, and he says, beware of practicing your righteousness before other people to be seen by them. Practicing righteousness in this case can be simply summarized as religious practices or even spiritual disciplines that should be, again, a response of the righteousness that we've been given in Christ. And yet we now do these things in an attempt to be more righteous, to establish our own righteousness. We become self-righteous in that act. His warning is that we need to be very careful about our motives for these, and with the by extension, any religious practice, whether it's going to church, whether it's taking communion, whether it is tithing, which is different from the giving that's described here, whatever the practice is that we do, he's saying there's a subtle danger. Beware of it. Beware, because you may be in this just to be seen by people. So since these can often be very public things, he warns us. Now, he's not saying that we should not ever be seen. Again, sometimes these are very public. We will be seen. And in fact, there are some practices that Jesus wants people to see. Earlier on in the sermon, what did he say about our good works? That your good works, so do these things so that people will see them and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. He is concerned with the motive. One guy put this pretty well, and he to distinguish between being seen and not being seen, as Jesus describes here. So he said this: when you are tempted to hide, like proclaiming the gospel, then be seen. When you're tempted to be seen, then hide. So what's going on in your heart is perhaps what you should be looking at, and see where the temptation is. So he's concerned with motive. Jesus is concerned always with the heart. To God, the deed is good or tainted based on our motive. The deed's the same. Some of the results will be the same. But it's good or tainted to God based on the motive behind it. The point of all of this is that we can fool some of the people all the time. We can fool all the people some of the time, but can't fool God any of the time. He sees not on the outward appearance, as Samuel was reminded by God when he chose the king. He looks on the heart. Okay. In each case, Jesus talks about rewards, right? It's in there very often in this passage. You know, you'll have no reward from your Father in heaven, or they have their reward already. It's mentioned four times in these four verses. The idea being that if our motive is to receive approval and applause from people, we will probably get it, and that's all we will get. On the other hand, if we seek the approval and applause of the Father in heaven, we will receive that, and we will be rewarded. In none of these cases is the reward from God defined. I think we can assume that God being pleased with us is a reward of its own. But that raises, I think, a very logical question you may be asking yourself. Maybe not, but I'll raise it for you just to disturb you. Why should we be worrying about rewards at all? Are we simply mercenary in our service of Jesus? Are we doing this only because we're looking, you know, for the cookie in heaven? What is that? I mean, what's the difference between that and wanting men to and women to celebrate us? Shouldn't these things be done because they are simply inherently good, and we shouldn't be worried about reward, whether it's from man or God or anybody else? There's a difference between these two. And again, I'll let my mentor, C.S. Lewis, describe the difference. He says this in a sermon he gave called The Weight of Glory. He said, "We must not be troubled by unbelievers when they say that this promise of reward makes the Christian life a mercenary." You understand that, right? The mercenary, the soldier who goes and fights for money for another country, whether he agrees with them or not. So we're doing this for the reward and for nothing else. There are different kinds of reward. There's a reward which has no natural connection with the things you do to earn it, and it is quite foreign to the desires that ought to accompany these things. Money is not the natural reward of love. That is why we call a man who marries a woman for the sake of her money a mercenary marriage. But marriage is the proper reward for a real lover, and he or she, they're not mercenary for desiring it. The proper rewards are not simply tacked on to the activity at which they are given. They are the activity itself in consummation. And that's the reward we have with God in heaven. It is serving him for him, which is attached this reward. It is a natural and essential outcome of it. So, Matthew is not coy about talking about it. He talks about it here and throughout the parables. Jesus talks about the parable of the talents and the rewards that are attached to it. That's what it is. It's living to please God. And as we live to please God, with that comes the affirmation of God. With that comes the reward in heaven. Paul talks about all of us Christians standing before the judgment seat of Christ. We will be accountable for what we've done in this life for Jesus, and rewards are passed. Now, that shouldn't scare us, and it shouldn't lead us to become proud. I think when we see Jesus, the pride will be taken off the table. But rewards are part of it. We shouldn't deny that that's part of what the gospel is talking about. All right. So the ethic here, this warning, this overall warning. Jesus is teaching of having a mind on the interests of God and thinking about that rather than whatever rewards might come on a human level through these activities that we would do. Again, it's internal. Okay. So he moves now to giving. That's the first topic. Hypocritical giving. Roll the camera. Thus, when you give to the needy, sound no trumpet before you, as the hypocrites do, in the synagogues and in the streets, that they may be praised by others. Truly, I say to you, that they have received their reward. Now, there's a very specific giving that Jesus is talking about here, and it's almsgiving, or giving to the needy. This is not him talking about the tithe that was required for every Jewish religious person, tithing. That is mentioned in other places, but not here. This is giving to the poor, giving to the needy, giving to relieve need on the part of anyone who may be out there. So it's very specific along those lines. And it had a very long and illustrious tradition in the Judaism of Jesus' days. Frankly, it has a long and illustrious tradition in Islam as well. It has a long tradition in Christianity. Giving to the needy, giving to relieve need. This kind of giving should be considered over and above the type of giving we give habitually and tithing and things like that. So that's what he's referring to. It was something that was expected, and it was honored. And it was honored so much that the religious leaders began to make a show out of it, as he talks. Now he refers to them as sounding a trumpet. He says, so when you give, don't sound a trumpet like the hypocrites do. Now, this is a reference to the Pharisees, and again, the religious elite drawing attention to themselves. Perhaps it's a reference to a trumpet-shaped receptacle that was used for collecting the offerings for the poor. They would go and dump it in there, right? And it kind of was shaped like a trumpet. It could simply be Jesus being funny, using hyperbole, which he often does, a sense of humor. It's, you know, it's kind of funny, isn't it? I'm giving! Boom! You throw it in. So even though the Pharisees may not have been blowing actual trumpets, they were certainly making it clear to people what they were doing. And they wanted to be seen. After all, they had a reputation to keep up. And these guys, most of them, are pretty wealthy. So the question is, well, if this were not a public thing, would you do it at all? To the Pharisees. So a word about the word hypocrite. Jesus says, don't be like the hypocrites. Most of you know it comes from the word which means actor. It means then to pretend or to feign or to dissemble, to act a hypocrite, to wear a mask. This is the hardest word that Jesus has for any class of people, and he employs it for these pious pretenders who pose as perfect. Again, he gives a withering rebuke to them in Matthew 23. He says this in verses 5 through 7. Everything they do is for show. On their arms they wear extra-wide prayer boxes with scripture verses inside, and they wear robes with extra-long tassels, and they love to sit at the head of the table at banquets and the seats of honor in the synagogues. They love to receive respectful greetings as they walk in the marketplaces and to be called rabbi. Hello, Dr. Mike. How are you doing today? Doctor. Yes, that's right. I am Dr. Mike. Several. There are other doctors here. There are several kinds of hypocrisy. There's, in one kind, the hypocrite fakes goodness but is actually evil, like those who tried to catch Jesus in something. Another form of hypocrisy is a hypocrite is puffed up with his own or her own self-importance and self-righteousness. This kind of person is more or less blind to their faults. There's no self-awareness of what's going on. He or she may be genuinely unaware that there is even hypocrisy in the action, even though he or she is very harsh towards other people and their sins. Jesus deals with this in Matthew chapter 7. The kind of hypocrisy involved here, I think, is more subtle than either of those two. It is believing that at heart you are conducting yourself with the best interest of the needy in mind. After all, you're giving, right? This person may thus be unaware of his or her own hypocrisy. The needy need it. They're needy. They need the gift. And by the way, the needy will be happy to receive it and very grateful to receive it. And all but the most discerning of onlookers will speak appreciatively of the philanthropist's deed. For all acknowledge that giving is good. And it is, inherently, it is good. Hypocritical piety is not from the heart. It is not genuine. It is play-acting piety. This kind of philanthropy is still motivated by a form of egoism. It explains why companies want to be known for giving money away. Everybody looks on that and says, oh, isn't that is so noble. And it is. So Jesus says that those who give in this way have received their reward in full. Now, what does this mean? Well, it's pretty clear, right? They desired to get applause from people, and they get it. What they want is praise, and that's what they get. And they will get, by the way, nothing else, according to him. They get applause, and their ego is bloated. The word used for they get their reward is something like the word receipt. So in other words, this is what they want, and it's paid in full. It's what they get. So they ought to be happy, right? They've gotten what they wanted. Jesus is saying, though, there's no reward from their Father who is in heaven. It stops there. Now, here's the takeaway. All giving to the poor is good. All. The poor need it, and so when it's done, poor people are truly helped. That's a good thing. But for the one giving, according to Jesus, motive matters. When we're concerned with our Father in heaven, he is the one who rewards. And there's something internal that goes on with this type of giving that is drawing us closer to Jesus and making us more like him than the other type of giving. It's very subtle. Very, very subtle. So Jesus says, when you give, don't be like the hypocrites. Blowing the trumpet, bah, 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 here it is. Look at me. I've done something good. Yeah, you have. Good for you. All right. Kingdom giving. Self-forgetfulness, I think, is the best way to describe it. Self-forgetfulness. But when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving may be in secret, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you. All right, how many of you are fans of the old TV show from the 60s, Get Smart? Or at least you know what it is and you watched it. This is a generational thing here. All of you under the age of 40 probably, unless you saw the movies that were out, you will recognize this. What is that, class? The Code of Silence. Chief, I insist we talk about this under the cone of silence. And the cone of silence never worked. They had to yell, and then they'd finally have to take it off. So in a sense, what Jesus is saying here is that when you give, keep it as secret as you can. Do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. Or if you are left-handed, don't let your left hand or your right hand know what your left hand is doing. This obviously is a figure of speech. Again, kind of a humor line for Jesus. I think he said it, if you can imagine this, with a little bit of a smile on his face. Okay, guys, don't be like the Pharisee. But here I am. When you give, keep it secret. Keep it quiet. Don't let your left hand know what your right hand's doing. And your Father who sees in secret will reward you. Seems the best way to describe what Jesus is saying here is to give and then just forget about it, to move on, to keep going. Or to put it another, Martin Lloyd-Jones, really a brilliant Bible teacher, said this: do not announce to others in any shape or form what you are doing. Now that's obvious. But less obvious, do not even announce it to yourself what you are doing when you give in this way. Give wisely. That's not here in this passage. It is in other passages, though. The Apostle Paul talks about it in 2 Corinthians 8, 9, and 10. Make sure that when you give, you're not just throwing money to the wind in some organization that is unscrupulous with the way they handle it. So do your due diligence when you give. But once having given, forget about it. Forget about it. Just do it. And forget about it and move on. It says, and then God, who sees in secret, will reward you. Dallas Willard said, the one who gives without regard to who is looking and does not even notice it as anything special themselves, it's no big deal, is the very one who has God's attention and becomes God's creative partner in well-doing. He or she will know the fellowship of God and see the effects of these deeds multiplied for good in the power of God. Now, I might mention one other thing here, and that's this. When we give to the needy or any other thing, we've done our due diligence and we give. I would say somebody giving in this way, they also take their hand off of it. There is no attempt to control the action based on the gift. As if, you know how this works. I've given here, therefore you must, and then it becomes an exchange, doesn't it? It's not truly a gift. The one who is giving for kingdom purposes, the one who is giving for the applause of heaven, is not trying to control anyone with money. That's its own reward. I get to control, right? It's kind of like I get honored by people. D.A. Carson, another expositor of this passage, says it's probably the only reward which genuine love wants when making a gift to the needy, namely to see the need relieved. When through the gifts the hungry are fed, the naked are clothed, the sick are healed, the oppressed freed, and the lost saved, the love which prompted the gift is satisfied. Such love brings with it its own secret joys and desires no other reward, and yet it has another reward, the reward that comes from our Father in heaven. So how do we give this way? Just very briefly. There's only one answer in what we should do and have such love for God that we have no time to think of ourselves at all. We shall never get rid of thoughts of self by concentrating on self. So when we give, give and be done. As the band comes up, move on to the next step. I want to read to you from 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 9, the Apostle Paul writing to that church about a different subject, but I think one that applies here. Paul writes this. He says, now concerning brotherly love, you have no need for anyone to write to you, for you yourselves have been taught by God to love one another, and indeed that is what you are doing to all the brothers throughout Macedonia. But we urge you, brothers, to do this more and more. So to Magnolia Baptist Church, to all of you listening this morning, whether you are here or whether you are listening online with us. You are excellent givers. That is borne out by the financial condition we enjoy at this church. You give sacrificially. You respond to people's needs. In a sense, you don't need instruction in this because you're already doing it. So I'd say to you, keep up the excellence in your giving. Excel still more by giving in response to the voice of the Holy Spirit, taking no self-righteous pleasure in it, but enjoying the affirmation of God that comes with it, which is a whole lot better than self-righteous pleasure. It can be a subtle difference, right? When you find yourself falling into that, just stop. Say, Lord, I am becoming proud of this. Help me. Stop me. I just want your glory. Let's pray. Our Father, thank you for giving us the opportunity while we are in this world to do good things with money. Thank you that you have given us, as those who have been created in your image, a heart which is very satisfied by self-sacrifice, because that's your heart. And so, Lord, when we give, I pray with all of my heart, and when I give, I pray with all of my heart, that we will be giving with that in mind, simply to see the need met and moving on to whatever's next, not lingering on it, not taking any kind of sinful delight in it, and certainly not doing it just because others are watching. Lord, I pray that I and all of us here will simply be playing to you, responding to your voice in our heart. And I pray this, Jesus, especially on this subject of giving.